White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 602.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! And welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our very own dearly beloved Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we have a good basketball team to cheer for.
Truth.
It's apparently not the number one basketball team in the country to cheer for. But it's not much lower than that, according to the air quote experts, unquote, unair quote.
Number one in our hearts.
It is. Well, and probably in real life, except for that one dude. I'll set the table and you comment all you want, all right? The story is Auburn got like 11 more first place votes on today's AP poll than Gonzaga, and I'll call him whatever I want, which is number one. We're number two. Another Gonzaga. But the reason that even though we got way more number one votes, we're still number two is that, or number two instead of number one, is that there's like at least one guy who put Gonzaga number one and Auburn number nine, which is a joke.
Yes.
Yeah. And so that undermined our point total down to where we didn't have enough to get to number one, right? Kind of like when they do the SEC voting, you know, in the preseason. Yes. So your thoughts, if any, on this?
I could not care less.
There you go.
It matters less than zero. And in fact, I'm going to tell you this. It's a good thing because I guarantee you Bruce Pearl is going to use that fire and squeeze some juice out of that to give to this team to prevent them from going in these next couple of games feeling a little overconfident. Like, they didn't respect you. You're not number one. You got to go show them something. He's working that right now. So in that sense, like, fine. Keep voting as number two. I don't care.
Well,
it only matters at the end.
Well, you know, though, I'm trying to open the Patreon, by the way, for later, and I'm getting a little distracted. I apologize because I want to be able to thank our patrons a little bit. Well, I kind of had a very brief little discussion with friend of the show and member of the podcast network, Delvin, earlier today. Delvin's position was he's kind of disappointed and mad that we're not number one. And I said, well, I don't want to be number one yet. And he's like, no, if we're wanting to be a blue blood, we need to go for it. And I totally get that. But I'm like, I'd rather punch up than be playing defense from that. I'd rather be number two going in than number one trying to save my rear end. So,
Again, the SEC schedule, we got a long way to go. But I think the value being number one is that Auburn's men's basketball team has never been ranked number one.
Yeah.
That's the value. Even if we were only ranked number one for a week, it's still something, an achievement, and we should value it. And so I get that piece. There are people harassing voters online today, and like that's a little much for me.
Yeah, right. Well, there is that one guy.
I understand that, and you can like whatever reply to one of his tweets or whatever, but that's it.
Okay? And I don't mean the number nine voter guy. There's this one other guy that I see a lot.
No, there's another guy named John Wilner who consistently ranks Auburn low. Get that.
So. Well, in any case, none of that really matters and certainly doesn't matter right now. What matters right now is that the team is just playing really well. And, you know, we've always, ever since, I think we kind of started this back in the 2018-2019 season that went to the Final Four.
Because 2018 football was...
Yeah, you know, not great. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. And here's the thing, and I wanted to mention this tonight very briefly. Back then, we suspected that good things were coming, right? We knew that Bruce was a good coach, a really good coach, and we thought that the team would be better than it had been in a while. We had no idea we were going to the Final Four that year. We had no idea we were going to go on a roll and roll right through the season, right through the SEC tournament, and right into the to the tournament. We had no idea. It was a voyage of discovery every game. And so we started saying that basketball was the happy place because when all else was bad, you could tune in to Auburn basketball twice a week and have a pretty good, not 100% obviously, or it wouldn't even be any challenge, you know, a pretty good likelihood that you'd be happy.
And it would be fun.
Yes.
It's not just that we're going to win, that they were fun, that they made it fun to be a viewer and a fan. And this, and basketball, we can win in basketball without it being fun.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've seen defensive first teams that were, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, boring and painful. And this is not that. This team is really fun. They have great personality. They love to play together. They're incredibly talented. They're deep and unselfish. And they are the happy place. I mean, it's mm-hmm. a joy to watch them play.
Yeah. Yeah, I think back to the end of Sonny Smith's run when he had so many good players there in like the mid-80s. He could play whatever style he wanted. He had Barkley, yeah. and then he had Person and Jeff Moore, Chris Morris, Frank Ford, Gerald White, Terrence Howard. And he could play whatever he wanted. But as those stars, one after the other, were gone, and we were left with like the guys that would have been third string just a couple of years earlier, do you remember what he did was he went to like a slow down, grind it out, run the clock, plotting, very little offense kind of attack. And that becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy because when you're playing that kind of style, then nobody wants to come play for you. So, you know, it's hard to recruit to a team that's losing and playing a very slow, boring style. I almost wish Sonny had gone down with all guns blazing instead of like retreating into his turtle shell. But I think that was the conventional wisdom and he did what he thought was right. But I think it sent us in kind of a spiral down that we'd never, other than a couple of years under Cliff Ellis, never really recovered from.
And I don't think it was that style that did us in. I think it was the decisions about coaching hires and that kind of stuff.
That didn't help either. Yeah. And then, but recruiting was never. Yeah. As good.
Never the same.
Yeah. Yeah. We had players under Sonny in 83, 84, 85, 86, 87. We had players that could play on this team. This team and the 2019 team and maybe a little bit 99-2000 are the only teams that had anything like what we had in the mid-80s. And I feel like they've kind of been forgotten. I mean, Charles hadn't, but the rest of that team has kind of been forgotten. You don't ever hear anybody talk about Chris Morris.
No, Chris Morris was a great player.
Great.
Chris Morris, Jeff Moore,
yes.
and Mike Jones.
Michael Jones.
On the same team. We're going to go to a real slant now. So that team was really talented, and I was so excited because I knew we were really good.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to play Georgia Tech in Atlanta at Christmas time. I think it was like 88 or 87 at Christmas. I can't remember. And
yes.
so – the week before we played, and this was the Georgia Tech team that had Kenny Anderson, Dennis Scott, and Brian Oliver that went to the Final Four.
The 3D and all that, yeah.
And so the week before we play them, Mike Jones gets declared ineligible, and Chris Morris or Jeff Moore, one of them, broke their hand.
Jeff Moore broke his hand in that game.
In the game, that's right. He broke his hand on the rim when a Georgia Tech player hit him and there was no foul called on that play. That should tell you everything you know about that game.
Yes. So. Yeah. I remember. Yeah. So basically we had to go the rest of the season with like Chris Morris and four backups.
Yeah.
I think it
was
like,
why Chris Morris went as a lottery pick. Because people are like, wow.
He's so much better than ever. Yeah. He was like the Danny Manning of that team after those other guys were out. Yeah.
It was
like Johnny Lynn and a couple other scrubs, you know, and you know, Terrence Howard wasn't bad, but he was a backup point guard.
Yeah.
That was this team, I think, also. Or I guess that was the year after.
Was Kaler on that team still? Or was,
do what?
Kaler, was he on that team?
Maybe. Somewhere in there. But either that team or the year before, and it has been a few minutes, so I don't remember exactly, but they were the ones that went to the NCAA tournament. This is what would happen those years. They win the first round. They'd always be seeded like 8 or 9. So they draw like another mediocre team in the first round and they'd win. And then they get number one, right? Because 8-9 and then 1-8 or 1-9. So we would always lose in the second round to the eventual national champion. And that year we drew in the second round Indiana, in Indiana. And that was the famous game where we were beating them. Michael Jones was going off. They couldn't stop him. We were beating Indiana in Indiana. And all of a sudden,
Bob Knight kicks
Bobby Knight. Bobby Knight starts crying to the referees, and suddenly they start calling everything imaginable in Auburn, fouled our guys out, and Sonny was over there just laughing while Bobby Knight was screaming at the refs. And next thing you know, we lose by like 20. We led like the whole first half, and we're in control, and all of a sudden they start calling every foul imaginable on us, and we end up losing by 20. And they went on to win the national championship that year.
That was the Keith Smart Indiana team that won the title.
So, yeah. Well, anyway, that's the good old days. We're at the good old, we're at the good new days now.
I was going to say that people look back and say, this was the good old days.
Yeah. Oh, people are always going to be looking back at this, no doubt, because this is going to be so much more memorable and we're living through it. And being a fan, we're going to talk about this in a second, but being a fan of this team is so much fun. I've never had so much fun being the fan of an Auburn basketball team as I am right now, for reasons we're gonna that are obvious and for reasons that we'll get to. But I wanted to kind of break down these last two games because after the Florida game, we were getting a little concerned that Kessler had fouled out. They were calling everything on Kessler. And we go up against Alabama in Tuscaloosa, and it looks like the same thing's going to happen again, and it does, right? He's very limited. He gets two early fouls. He gets a third foul like before halftime. And he ends up playing very little, and then he fouls out before the game is over. So what were your thoughts kind of like in regard to the Alabama game?
It was a huge game in that sense. Like, Florida and Alabama both were right at Kessler at the very beginning of the game to try to draw fouls on him. And Alabama doesn't have a lot of good big men, but they have those guards that they kept driving right at him and, like, basically dare him to get a block or try and get a foul on him. And they did. And the second foul on him or whatever I thought was weak. But it's, you know, it's what it was, and it's what teams are going to try to do to him. And so without him, you know, it really opened up the middle of the lane for them to do some different things. But on the other side, you know, Auburn kind of pulled away and pulled away and pulled away. And then Alabama made that big run in the second half where they scored like 14 in a row, that had the big dunk, the gym was going crazy and stuff. And Auburn was kind of on the ropes. And then Alan Flanagan, you know, steady,
cool as a cucumber.
Steady, calm veteran, making plays out there, pulls them out of the fire, makes some free throws. Some other guys made some shots and you know, got to control the ball at the end. Alabama missed their last 8 shots in that game. The defense just went up on Auburn's side about 20 notches, and they're like, you're not getting another good shot. And they didn't. And then Flanagan hit the free throws, and that was the ball game. And again, he isn't close to being all the way back. He's not close to being now Flanagan that he used to be. He will be before the end of the season, but he's not there now. But in that moment, you saw the value of him, the veteran who's been in these wars, who's calm. He's not going to get rattled by that crowd or the pressure or the stakes of that game. And he went down there, made the free throws, no problem.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, it's slowly coming back to him. He's made more moves than I thought he could make already at this point. He's looking better. He's kind of ahead of schedule, but he's still not all the way. But he's not a player that has like that one thing you can hang on him, like he's a big shot blocker or he's a 3-point shooter or whatever. He's kind of just a good utility man, you know, mixing it up in the middle.
And he's good. He's a little good at everything.
Yeah.
He could create his own shot. He could shoot outside. He can rebound. He can play great defense on, you know, on a mid-sized guy. And so he has that kind of calm ability to get the ball and make a play when the team is kind of frantic and stuff.
Yeah.
And this was also a huge Jabari Smith game. He went into that game, a big national TV game, and was just like, all right, let's go. And he, a couple times, he made plays that were just awesome. I mean, he just, you know, nothing you could say except, man, that guy is incredible.
He is the guy that, like, when you've got to have it, when you absolutely positively have to have it there overnight, as they used to say, FedEx Jabari will find a way to deliver the package on time and under budget. He'll hit. He's so smooth. He hits. People can be all up in his face. He doesn't care. He just smooth stroke, bang, and knocks it down, whether it's two or three.
And he's right-handed, and so they always want to make him play to the left. And there was a play late in that game where he went right between two Alabama defenders and laid it in with the left hand off the glass. It was a huge play.
Yeah.
And it was because they're trying to force him to go left, and he's like, okay, I'll take
it. Problem. Not a problem. Yeah. Really, I mean, he is like the – yeah, we have so many – that's the thing. It was where this team has so many different parts. Like, it felt like the 19 Final Four team, it felt like they had the shooter in Bryce Brown, the trigger man with the long three in Jared that could drive to the hoop. I mean, he was so invaluable in the tournament. And then after those two, we kind of had a bunch of role players that were all kind of interchangeable. I mean, they were all very great, very good players, and we love them to death and everything, but you could kind of swap them around, and they could all kind of do more or less the same thing. I mean, there was one or two here or there, but they were kind of interchangeable, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, Chuma was just kind of a slightly more talented one of those guys, really. Just kind of that tweener kind of, you know.
He didn't emerge to be like this killer until the end of the season.
Very end. Right. Yeah. I think against Georgia, he hit a three in the last second. I'm like, why are they letting this guy shoot a three? Oh, okay, good. You know, he can do it. Good. But we didn't know that until then. Yeah. But this team is so very different. It just couldn't be much more different from that Final Four team. It's got two point guards that are both different from each other, but both can do really. You know, if you discounted Zepp and were like ready to go completely Wendell Green, Zepp came out and made the first 5 points against Ole Miss.
Yep. And was great against their guards on defense. Like,
yeah.
Really caused problems for them.
Yeah.
And against Alabama, too.
Yeah. I'd rather have these two than one slightly better that you only have to, you know, get part of the time. And then we've got, of course, Kessler, who's unique. You've got Jabari, who is unique. You've got KD, who is very unique.
I love that guy.
He's so great.
I love KD Johnson.
Oh, love him.
I love that guy.
Can't wait to see what he's going to do against his former school on Wednesday. That should be fun.
We're gonna talk about that in a minute.
Oh, it's going to be fun. And I mean, and I don't mean to leave off the other guys too, but I mean, they just got so many, and every one of them is different. That's new
well,
for us.
And this is a good example. What happened when Kessler had foul trouble at Alabama? Who came in, you know, crowd favorite, Auburn football, no shirt wearing, Cardwell.
Yeah,
and it just dominated in Alabama. He had a great game. The game of his career at Alabama.
And depending on the circumstances in the game and the situation – you can just point to any one of those guys and say, you can take over and win the game for us. And KD has done it. Kessler has done it. Jabari has done it. Wendell Green has done it. I mean, you know, that was his turn, I guess.
And this is the other thing. There's two things there. One is there's no pressure on them if they're having a bad game. They're like, okay, my teammates have got me. You know what I'm saying? I'll play defense and set them up and rebound or whatever. And because there's enough talented guys that always – two or three other guys are going to be having a great game. So then if you're not having your A game, you just go out there, play and contribute, and they'll get the win. So there's a lot less pressure on them individually because they've kind of accepted the pressure collectively and they're being unselfish.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, because Auburn's playing more guys, our key players are playing fewer minutes. So when we get to the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament, our star players will have played – you know, 100, 200 less minutes than the best players on the other teams in the country who may be kind of ground down and worn out by that point. We've seen that a lot in the past where teams run out of gas, and this team is much less likely to do it because our star guys are able to play fewer minutes.
So good. Yeah. And one thing I think we can say for sure is this team hasn't come close to playing its best game yet, but they got a lot of basketball between now and March to start getting closer and closer to that. I'd love to see them do what the 2019 crowd did. They just got better and better and better. And remember, the 2019 team had a fatal flaw, which was if they you mentioned last week that they could get nuclear hot and streaky and score a bunch. They could also get ice cold.
Yeah.
This team doesn't seem to have that problem. They, every now and then a little bit, but they've got people of different kinds that can break that ice when they have to.
Yeah. I think they can have colder stretches, but like I said, because there's so many good players, somebody's going to be having a good day, whether it's inside or outside or whatever, and they're going to keep the offense going.
Yeah, we pretty much, for like the most of the season in 19, we needed Bryce to start hitting threes or we were dead if we went in a bad spell. Yeah. And then at the end, we had to have Jared just take it to the hoop, right? When nothing else was working, Jared would just drive straight to the hoop. But we've got guys that can do that now, several of them.
Yes.
So that's nice. And, nice.
Speaking of being cold, that's what happened in the first half at Ole Miss.
All right, let's look at Ole Miss real quick. So this is what I want to talk. I want to break this one down. Everything I have rarely seen. This is a fascinating game. This was really a fascinating game. We're talking about it for a minute. I've rarely seen a game where one team just the whole court tilted in their direction like that. It's like the court was at a 45-degree angle leaning toward Ole Miss. They couldn't throw the ball out of bounds that it didn't bounce off the referee and go in the hoop. They couldn't have Auburn shoot that the rebound didn't come straight to one of them. It like had a homing beacon in it. They couldn't hit you with a hammer in plain view of the TV cameras and be called for a foul. So Ole Miss, for the first 10, 12 minutes, 15 minutes of that game, Ole Miss was playing as well as any basketball team could ever hope to play, right? Making every shot, getting every rebound, not letting the other team get any rebounds, and never getting called for a foul. I don't think they got called for a foul until there were like 4 minutes to go in the first half. A foul.
And they didn't have a turnover during that whole time.
Yeah. The one thing that we can say, though, is that Kessler didn't get in foul trouble this time. But, I mean, you know, watching that happen, the funny thing about it was we weren't playing bad. We were actually shooting about 50%, 55% that whole time. We just weren't getting rebounds, and we were getting called for fouls, although it wasn't Kessler. So it's like if we had been playing bad and Ole Miss had been playing the way they were, it would have been like 50-20 at halftime. Literally, it would have been like 50-20. But we were playing well enough that we were within about, I think they were up 14, right? Mm-hmm. I think they were up, they were up 14 in the first half. And the only thing I was worried about, I'm like, we can come back. The only thing I was worried about is if we get much deeper in the hole than this, we may not have enough time in the entire second half to come back. But instead, we kind of, you know, it reminded me of, okay, you remember the comeback, the 2010 Iron Bowl, where the same thing was happening to us. Everything was going Alabama's way. Nothing was going our way. But right before halftime, Cam hit, I think it was, my brain didn't in football right now, one of our three great receivers on that team. He hit him for a touchdown.
I want to say T-Rob, but it's not. No.
But it was the one that we abbreviate like that. Anyway, he hit a long touchdown, one where the two defensive backs kind of ran into each other, and he caught it and took it. Terrell Zachary came to me. Terrell Zachary.
I was getting there.
You were very close. Yeah, T-Zach. He caught it, went for a touchdown. It didn't catch us up. But you could see momentum kind of, if it wasn't changing jerseys, it at least had kind of stopped putting on the other team's clothes for a second. Maybe took the hat back off, left the jersey on. And so, you know, then coming out in the second half, we could kind of reel them back in. That's exactly the way this game went. We pulled it within 6 or 7 before halftime, and then come out in the second half and take about 10 more minutes to kind of pull even. And then after that, it's just fighting your way to the end. And like I said, I just knew they couldn't keep playing at that level for the whole 40 minutes. Unless you're Villanova playing Georgetown in 1985, you don't make every shot you throw up over the whole course of a game. Eventually, your luck changes, and it's a little bit luck, and it's a little bit we probably made some adjustments. We played harder.
I'm going to say this. We did play better defense in the end of the first half and in the entire second half. But some of it was they just were kind of playing way over their head and way out of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't sustainable. It wasn't who they really were.
No.
They had never shot like that, anything close to that in a game this season. Mm-mm. And I think you're right in the sense that they just came out kind of like and played as well as they could ever play for about 15 minutes of game time, and it wasn't enough. They needed to be up 25 or something at that point.
Because we were still playing pretty well, even though they were pulling away. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right. Exactly.
It wasn't enough because it was only 14. And then KD makes some plays, and then we cut it to 7 at halftime. And then you're like, okay, fine. We're within 7 of you. We're going to be okay.
No problem. Yeah. And here was a weird thing. In the first half, they were even outscoring our bench. And that's one thing we've been able to point to all year is that our bench just outscores everybody. Sometimes our bench outscores our starters. Well, I mean, when you consider that Wendell Green is often on our bench, I mean, you know, you got some guys on the bench that are good. And so, in fact, they've been cycling him around a little bit. I know that Devin Cambridge is now not a starter. Wendell Green, I don't think, has ever been a starter. You know, these are big-time Auburn players. Chris Moore didn't even play against Ole Miss. I don't know what was up with that.
I mean, again, he didn't play and Leor Berman didn't play.
Right.
But... yeah, they played Cambridge actually, I think, played a little bit of shooting guard. But Jalen Williams, again, plays a lot. And in that game, Kessler did not get in foul trouble, so he played a lot.
That was big, yes, and he was big in it.
He was big, whether he's big or not,
but he was important.
But he took over that game.
Yeah.
Did not let – again, they're not a great outside shooting team. And so the ones that, basically, we're going to call it like luck or shooting better than they have shot in the other game this year. The first half went away. Mm-hmm. Then they had to go to the basket. And Kessler wasn't in foul trouble. He was in the game. And every time they went to the basket, he was there. And he blocked a shot or altered the shot. And it really, really made a huge difference.
He blocked a three-point shot.
I know.
I was like, what?
Well, that's the thing. Like, they... so many guys like that, they're like, if your guy comes out on the perimeter and does a screen or whatever, you just go back towards the middle and we'll figure it out or whatever. And Bruce Pearl's like, no, you're going to switch like everybody else. And I don't care if you end up guarding a 5'11 guy, you're going to guard your rear end. And he does it. Yeah. And he's good at it. Yeah. And it bothers the heck out of them. So
it was nice. Go ahead.
I was going to say the other thing about both Alabama game and the Ole Miss game we have to talk about is the Auburn crowd.
Yes.
Like, there was a huge Auburn crowd in those buildings in both games, and you could hear them, and I think it made a difference in the Ole Miss game and giving the team confidence to come back. Mm-hmm. And what's happening is, Auburn Arena is a great home court advantage. We talked about that a lot, but it's small, and the secondary market ticket prices in Auburn Arena, are well over $100 for a ticket to go to a game. And I'm not talking about Kentucky. I'm talking about a regular game.
How well I know. We had to pay to go see CSUN last year.
Yeah.
Or year before last.
So Auburn fans looked around and go, man, that's it's $200 to see us play somebody else in a couple weeks. But wait, I look over here in Athens, Georgia. If you'd have gone a couple weeks ago on SeatGeek and over there, you could get a ticket for that game for $10, and you could get a ticket to Alabama for $20 or whatever, and Ole Miss the same. So that was the move that Auburn fans have been looking around and going, we want to see this team. We want to be part of it and experience it and share our joy with them. Like you were talking about the fan part of it. And it's cheaper to go invade these other teams' arenas.
Oh yeah.
And so one of the constants in SEC basketball over the years has been the Kentucky fans that travel and they invade your arena and drive you crazy. And now that's us. We're that team. Our fans invade the other team's arena, and Auburn fans buy all the tickets and take up the arena. And you could hear them in Tuscaloosa. And I know that drove the Alabama crazy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah. Remember, I was at the SLU game.
I know. And you were leading the way. There was a bunch of Auburn fans there. We could hear you.
We were yelling. Absolutely. And they were not happy about it. And that was St. Louis. Why do they even care about us, right? Much less, you can imagine how much it must have bothered Alabama and Ole Miss. Speaking of which, and I hate that I found this out now, but it was pointed out to me that Oxford is much closer to here than I thought it was. Because, see, I've always thought that the closest SEC towns to where I am, obviously Columbia, Missouri, and then
Nashville
for Vanderbilt, and Kentucky, Lexington. But they're all in the East, so Auburn doesn't come to them as much, at least in football. But Oxford is like not 4.5 hours away, just slightly further than Nashville. It's much further north than I realized, even though I've been there before.
It's just south of Memphis.
Yeah. And I go to Memphis every now and then. So I got a convention there this spring. So we're like, oh, we may have to go down to Ole Miss. That'd be nice, because that's not a 9-hour trip like going to Auburn is. So that, so that would be really cool. I have that in the back of my head, in my back pocket now. So, yeah, Auburn will be at Missouri. I don't think I'm going to get to go because it's on like a Tuesday night, which is just really bad. But I wish. I hate it, but it's eh. So like we were talking about before, Auburn is now ranked second in the country. I can't quite wrap my brain around that. I mean, it's like watching them all year, you think, of course they are. They should be number one. But in the grand scheme of things, it just doesn't even seem like something we should be considering. I've said before, if you ask me which of my favorite teams in different sports I would think would be the least likely to win the ultimate prize in that sport, I would have always said Auburn basketball winning the national championship. And yet,
yes,
here we are in the world where that is possible and almost happened already, you know. And I just, you know, so, you know, here we are. What about the rankings, the projections, the SEC? What are your thoughts there?
I guess that, you know, we talked about the ranking, the AP rankings already, but again, Auburn's moving up on all the other rankings in terms of the official ranks that the NCAA uses, net and all those other advanced stat things. The Auburn is projected right now to, you know, the only games left on the schedule that Auburn is projected to not win are at Tennessee. And then we have one other road game when we're like a slight underdog, maybe. So that's it. Okay. So right now we're projected to end the season with 3 losses. We would be like 33-3 or something heading into the SEC tournament. So, that's again, maybe not realistic, whatever, but we're going to talk about that and the hedging and stuff. But I think it's, you know, it's clear we're headed to the NCAA tournament. We're in great shape for that. We, along with some of the, you know, kind of LSU and Kentucky, have kind of pulled away a little bit, I feel like, in the SEC, and are kind of making a big step up nationally.
But LSU lost to Arkansas the other night? Unexpectedly.
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
Mm-hmm. So, and poor Tennessee. Well,
and the other one that's out there is A&M.
Yeah.
They're undefeated in conference. They're 15-2, but I feel like they haven't played nearly the schedule that we have. So that's going to be a huge game down the road to play them.
Well, Tuesday night, which is probably the day that most people are listening to this, Kentucky plays Texas A&M, and I'm going to watch that. I don't tune in non-Auburn basketball games very often, but I'm intending to try to watch that one because that sounds like it's going to be very interesting. Kentucky just dropped 109 on Tennessee.
in Knoxville, I think. Oh, and you're right. And it's good. A scouting thing for both these teams we're going to play soon. So I want to see also.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, you've pointed out the meme thing is incredibly fun. And after the Alabama game was insane.
Yes.
There were like 5,000 replies to that.
Pretty big after Ole Miss too, yeah.
And it did it again with Ole Miss. And then what I want to talk about is my favorite thing related to the story is the Murray State angle. Are you aware of this?
Yes. All right. Hold on. So I thought, because that's a bigger story, but I'll just say I unleashed a couple of new ones for Alabama, and then I had a little inspiration. I went back into the archives of our former football coaches, and I threw out a few more after Ole Miss. I was very proud of them. We had Shug Jordan storm the beaches of Normandy to bring you this L. That was very popular. Tommy Tuberville filibustered you this L. That was very popular. And I had Pat Dye lost his pants, but he found you this L. That one was pretty popular too. So I thought you'd be pleased with those, right?
I love the Shug Jordan.
And then there was the one that people didn't really understand, which was the horned warrior from the 13th Warrior with Wendell Green's face. And it says the Wendell with an X through it. And then it said the Wendell, like our guy, brought you this L. I was like, you know what? That's like a really obscure costume at Dragon Con. Most people don't know what in the world you're talking about. But those that get it love it, right? They get it because they're like, I get that. and then it's, but it's still stupid. But I get it. All right. Tell us about the Murray State races.
All right. So Auburn played Murray State before Christmas. We beat them. They, their social media people, you know, were not happy about the meme thing, ended up deleting the tweet. That Auburn fans kept bugging them about it because they never put one back up. And they would, every time Murray State basketball would post a tweet, Auburn fans would reply with harassing, you know, silly memes and stuff. And it was kind of a, this, and Murray State blocked a bunch of Auburn people on Twitter and stuff. And it became this kind of cold war on Twitter between Murray State and the Auburn basketball fans. And finally, this one player on Murray State, Tevin Coleman, I don't think that's right, but
He
brokered a peace between Auburn Twitter and Murray State. He posted the score thing and said, we're going to be done with this. We're going to make peace. And he brokered a peace between
Camp
Auburn Twitter
David.
And
the, Jimmy the, yes, Carter he, at Camp David.
We should nominate him for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes.
This year, this guy. And so this is my favorite thing.
Well, wait, why has nobody done a meme of his face and Aubie and the Murray State guy at the Rose Garden with the three handshake?
Well, or him with just with the Nobel Peace Prize. I want both of
them. There you go. So, yes, both.
So he brokers the peace treaty. So now he has become Auburn Twitter's favorite non-Auburn player, and when Murray State beats other teams, Auburn fans are going into Murray, the other team's tweets, and dunking on them for this player.
For him.
In a show of support for Murray State.
That's wonderful.
That is the kind of just fun silliness that I appreciate that's happening here. So
As fans, that's what we have to give, and we give all that we have to give.
That's
it. Yeah, I love it. Yeah,
but also, like, don't take it seriously.
Yeah, it's silly.
It's basketball. It's fun. Have fun with it.
I've always thought that basketball is a sport that engenders and encourages just wacky comedy behavior more than football does, right? Football is like dead serious. Your uncle just died. Mm-hmm. Basketball is like, woo, da 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 da.
Well, in basketball, especially like in our day, there was a bunch of Twitter stuff about Beard Eves today. Like, we could always yell at the other team's coach, and they could hear me. Like,
yeah.
I could say something to Will Sanderson, and he heard what I said.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that was fun on Twitter. Those aren't on Twitter. But one of the beat writers, one of the Auburn guys, an Alabama person had said, you never saw a game in Beard Eves. Like, in other words, there was this whole thing today of Auburn has only been interested in basketball for the last 4 or 5 years and never paid any attention. They told him, you'd never been in there. And so he asked for Auburn people to give their best Beard Eves Coliseum stories. And I mentioned that you and I were there when it wasn't even Beard Eves. It was just the Auburn Memorial Coliseum. We even registered for classes that first couple of years in the Coliseum. You had to go to different tables inside the perimeter of it. And I was noting my favorite Beard Eves. I mean, I saw REM there. I saw Joe Piscopo and all that. My favorite story, though, is that I was coming out of a class. I had two classes in there, actually. And because there's classrooms and offices underneath there. It's so big. And I turned a couple of corners just curious. I could hear a noise. And so I just start walking down these corridors, and I come out onto the floor of the basketball arena. And, of course, you know, you can walk pretty far out onto it before you get to, like, the sawhorse and the policeman or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you could get to the stands before that. So I kind of went over and saw that it was the state basketball tournament. And I just climbed up into the bleachers there before I ever got close to the guard or anything. I just climbed up in the bleachers, and like Keenan Carpenter and several other players from those late 80s teams were all sitting there watching, and it was Andalusia versus Holt. And Andalusia's star player was Robert Horry.
Oh, God.
Future Alabama, future
You're really
Laker.
You're not here with Robert Horry at high school.
Oh, man. I sat there and I watched the Iron Men of Holt against Andalusia, heavily favored Andalusia with their NBA star. And Holt didn't have a guy over 5'10", I don't believe. And they won. And it was one of the best basketball games. They put like four guys bodying up Horry and just denied him the ball. And it was beautiful. It was amazing.
I thought Holt was like a small fortress in Dorne somewhere.
Probably so, and that was their secret. But yeah, so Anyway, so all right, we got Georgia coming up. Oh, wait, we missed one thing you wanted to mention. Back up.
I got to talk about the Peacock thing.
I don't have any understanding of this at all, so please.
All right, this is good. We need to have this conversation because this is relevant for us. So this is from College of Magnolia. Some of the people we follow in there, Ryan Starrett and AU Chief and Son of Crow, and they were recording a podcast and having this conversation. And Son of Crow said, look, no, we have a great basketball team. We have the best basketball team. No more waffling. No more, well, we hope or maybe or we're not good when this happens. No, it's time to stick our chest out and be proud and be like, we're great and we know it. So the word is, it's time to be peacocks. Like a peacock sticks their chest out. They stick the fans up behind them. And we're like, yeah, yeah, we're the best. Okay. And y'all are all crud and we're going to win. Auburn basketball is the best basketball team. So it's a mindset about no more of this kind of, well, we don't normally play well against Kentucky or on the road at this team. No, we're great. We're going to be. It's a little bit, you know, we had the thing in football a couple times where we flown the black flag and done the pirate thing. So like the rest of the SEC and the NCAA could kiss our rear end and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of like that. It's a mindset approach to the whole thing about letting go of the uncertainty and kind of the hedging that all is right. normal to, especially to an Auburn basketball fan, and to just fully embrace the fact that this is the best team in the country and they're our team and we love them and we're all the way in.
Well, you certainly make a good case for it there. Now, is that what the little P in the box is too? Is that the
yes.
same thing?
In the little peacock logo.
I've seen the little, because I thought it was a tree.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, like this is how it's passed over, because when the men's basketball team tweeted the highlight video from Ole Miss, they put a peacock in the tweet. Okay. So they know, they get it 100%.
They're on top of things. Yeah.
And in the first 10 seconds, of that video were nothing but the tiger walk in the hotel in Oxford. So,
so again, is the P in the box the same as the peacock?
Yes.
All right. We're doing this in real time. I don't know how to put an emoji in my name.
Well, we shouldn't do it in real time.
I'm not doing it in real time. I went to put the little P in there. I'm not going to put the little tree bird thing. I'm not going to do that. I'll support it, but I'm not going to do it. But
you can
I'll
put it in your bio.
Yeah, but I probably have to do it on the phone. The computer sucks. Can't do Twitter stuff on the computer. It's crap. You got to go to the phone for it. So anyway, all right. I'm on that. When the show is over, I'll jump on my phone and I'll fix that, because my last name does start with a P. See, so I got a built-in. Oh, that reminds me. By the way, what? Boris had a meme. Did you see that? Boris tweeted out
a meme of us.
Well, no, there was somebody else tweeted that one. Somebody tweeted us at the bookstore and did the whole thing. It said, you know, whatever we are, and then it said me. But no, Boris had one. I had nothing to do with. Okay, I promise, I had nothing to do with it. But Boris had one on his account, on his Twitter account, that had his picture, because he's all about his picture, right, on his hat and everything, with the laser eyes, and it said AU Wishbone Bowl Pick'em winner. Picked you this L.
Nice.
And again, nice. You can figure out who helped him with that, because it wasn't me. So you know who it is. It helps Boris with stuff. All right.
I want to say, like, it's peacock mentality thing. I want you to embrace it. And this is me embracing it. I went and looked where the NCAA tournament sites are for this year.
Oh. Like,
where are the closest NCAA tournament sites to me? Yeah. I went and did that this weekend. That's the kind of way you should be thinking.
Well, we don't know where we'll be, though, is the only thing.
It doesn't matter. You buy tickets to the one closer, you could resell it.
Yeah.
And if they're there, then you got them. I'm just saying.
My nephew, you know, who travels like I did in the 90s, he went to the Final Four in 19. I'm expecting he'll probably be back on the plane again.
The Final Four is in New Orleans.
Ooh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I bet those tickets will be expensive.
You get that right.
All right. We're not, obviously, at this point, and we talked about this, going to do a full football show, but...
We got to finish. We have one more thing for basketball.
One more thing.
We play Georgia on Wednesday, Kentucky on Saturday. Georgia is at 9 Eastern, 8 Central on Wednesday, and I think it's on ESPNU. Yeah.
8 Central, 9 Eastern. Oh, man, Mira's going to be mad.
Yeah, and again, I'm on the East Coast, 9 Eastern. And Kentucky is at 1 Eastern, noon Central on CBS on Saturday.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So noon Central, CBS. That's big time.
Yeah. And CBS. And again, it's a big time game. Kentucky. So here's what to expect.
Is it at Auburn or at Lexington? I don't know.
At Auburn.
I don't really look ahead. I just kind of take them one at a time. I don't even know who we're playing when.
So here's what I'm going to tell you about this week. Georgia's terrible. They're the worst team in the SEC. Auburn fans bought half the tickets in that arena. I fully expect it to be 50% Auburn fans and it to sound like a home game because we are going to annihilate them. And this is the Katie Johnson homecoming game. So if he's been kind of, you know, playing at a high level, I expect it to be 11.
Georgia fans come into their own stadium only to find out
it's a trap.
You got that right. It is going to be a trap. They are going to be so mad when they look around and realize that there's, you know, whatever, thousands and thousands of Auburn fans.
I actually have Georgia announcers, radio announcers on the soundboard, and this is what they say when they walk into that arena.
Oh, my God!
That's actual Georgia's. That is. That's from the prayer.
I get it. And they had Kentucky on Saturday at home. You know that's going to be gigantic. You know that arena is going to be off the charts. And the students are probably going to have to camp out Friday night to get in there to get good seats. And they got great big men. It's going to be great to see their guys up against Kessler and Jabari Smith and stuff. I can't wait to see that game.
You mentioned New Orleans a minute ago. When the Georgia fans come into this to their arena, it's going to just seem like there's a funeral about to happen for somebody, right? And they're going to say,
"Who is it? Yours."
I love the Georgia guy's going to be going, "Ugh!" I love that little noise. So,
So we're not going to have the long football discussion that we had planned for this evening that I have teased several times.
We'll get to it.
We'll get to it. We got plenty of offseason to go. But I do want to bring the kind of the headlines version of this to say, we got a transfer in this weekend. DJ James, a cornerback from Oregon.
Another cornerback.
And another guy who could play. Again, we're losing McCreary. Lost a couple other guys. He could come in and play right away. And we had two defensive linemen enter the transfer portal yesterday and today. Lee Hunter and J.J. Pegues.
No! I didn't hear about J.J.
It just happened right before we went on there, and I knew that was going to be your reaction. That's why I'm going to talk about it because, this is one of those problems with the transfer portal. We have kind of too much depth, on the defensive line.
But he was playing.
He was playing. Hunter was not playing. Hunter was a top 100 in the nation recruit last year who didn't play a bit this season. And so I get it from him. I'm unhappy. I'm disappointed because I think he's a really valuable guy in the long run. But Pegues, too, I'm not happy. I love that guy. I want him to play. But I think they look around and see we signed the number one JUCO defensive lineman. We just got this big transfer from Oregon. Mm-hmm. Both those guys are coming into play. Mm-hmm. Colby Wooden's back. Harris is back.
It's
going to be a problem.
Is you think that where J.J. goes, he'll go back to offense, or is he going to stick to his defensive line?
Well, Kobe Hudson went to Central Florida.
Yeah.
What if Pegues goes to Central Florida and plays tight end? I know. I'm going to be – again, that's the one guy I really didn't want to leave because he's so fun. I think he's just scratching the surface of what he can be. And it doesn't mean he could change his mind, but that's a tough one.
Well, yeah, I know we're building a different mindset and rebuilding the team and all that, but it still just kind of sucks. But anyway, I just keep reminding myself, go back to your happy place because...
In March Madness, let's shock the world!
Of course, it's not going to be a shock this time. That's the difference, John. It won't be a shock this time.
It won't be a shock because we're going to be the number one seed and we're going to road grade those people.
It will not be.
In March Madness, let's shock the world.
I'm going to just keep dropping them bombs, man.
You're playing the wrong standby. It's going to be a shock. We're going to be the doomsday machine.
What are you? Some kind of doomsday machine, boy.
That's right.
I love it. Well, Kentucky comes rolling in next weekend, and all we got to do is say,
well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you here.
That's right. That's right. We do. Any other football news? I guess that's pretty much all we need to talk about. We have a Guess the Game coming up. Jared got on the stick and got that thing put together this afternoon, and he has got it right to us. Thank you, Jared. And I'm going to get to it in just 1 second after I quickly thank the patrons, because this show would not exist. We couldn't do it. As I always say, we don't allow or don't have any commercials other than ourselves, right? Our own show. Because I get offers all the time and I say, no, thank you. We make the promise to our listeners that they will not have to listen to ads if they will support us through Patreon, and that's what they do. And we couldn't be happier about it. So here, and if you want to join their ranks, by the way, and this is the time of the year normally when we start losing a few because people come in, they're all excited during football season. I get it. We lose a few, but that hurts, right? So we need new people, new fresh blood to come in for basketball season. Get fired up to help the Wishbone to cover basketball season and talk about it. Here are the, you go to www.auwishbone. I keep forgetting to say the website. www.auwishbone.com. www.auwishbone.com. Click on the big orange button, become a patron. Here are the folks who are currently doing that. We have to thank Samuel Salvatore, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Brandon Sisson, Carl Von Drunker, Dr. Crackham, Patrick Hayes, and Bradley Blackman, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, Logan Chilton, Matthew Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Brian's Not Harsin' Around, Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Hegler, Earl Ricks, Eric Morgan, Bobby, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith. May God have mercy on the soul of Georgia and Kentucky. Way to go, Rusty. That was Rusty. Rusty dunks on Georgia and Kentucky. Beautiful. Mickey B. Ole Miss's Miracle Medical Staff, still getting pub. Owl Go Rhythm. Paul Miles, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf.
Like an unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thundersnow.
I just felt like firing that up. I haven't played it in a while. Rich Reimer, Sarah Browns, Steve Harlan, Tank the Hunter, Theodore Gary, Valiant Hermes, War Eagle Always. Amen to that. WDE Richie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Body, Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, our champion, Brandon Smith, Carter Glaus, Chris the Hilton, Colby Butler, Corey Smyer, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Die Bama, and they did. They had a really bad week, John. Should we take a moment of silence for the really bad week that Alabama had? No, I agree. Eric Mann, Heather and Yancey Steingraver, Helping Van Upgrade His Insulation, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, listen to hellbentatl.com, and
smoke weed every day.
Yes. Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Saban is shorter than Shivers, Saban needs a new toupee, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, The Cato, The The Cato, the Barner, the. Oh, beautiful. Well done, Cato. This is the year Jinxo Jordan has improved so much under this new offense. He's focused, he's having fun. Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Weagle 87, Alex Nguyen. Alex Currard says War Eagle Brian Pittman is my best friend. Alum of a basketball school, indeed. Auburn Elvis. And finally, Ben Amos, Ben Hanshue, Ben Regas, Brian Albanese, C. Braun, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, David Smiley, Elizabeth Donald. Got to get better at
We got to get better at celebrating.
That's right. I like when they incorporate a little bit of the soundboard. That's cool. That's the next big thing, I think, now. Is Kentucky really even a basketball school anymore since we made a Final Four more recently than them? Wow.
Please clap.
That was good. I'll buy this for a dollar. James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrick, Jeremiah Schumann, Jesse Newell should watch less Bachelorette and more basketball. Well done. Well done. John Samuel Schenker, Jingleheimer Schmidt. That's a good one. John Stubbs, John Zavachin, John Soundboard, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains, a.k.a. Auburn Dad for Life, Mark Squire, Michael Halbrook, MVP Captivating Kathy Bright, Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Stephen Thompson, the artist formerly known as Spanky. I guess he's not Spanky anymore. This is the year that Katie Johnson has improved so much in Pearl's offense that Bruce will quietly sit in his chair. That's another one.
Please clap.
Very good. Trevor Johnson, Brent Rumble, and Chris Plus, our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. www.auwishbone.com. I'd like to thank you, John. But I'd like to thank, John, that we have one of the only thanking the patron segments in all of podcasting that people like look forward to rather than fast forwarding past. Is that possible?
It's fair. It is entertaining, and I appreciate the creativity every time.
Yeah, people are really, really clever, and I hope they keep it going. All right, let's get straight on to, again, www.auwishbone.com. Click on the big orange button. Let's get to Jared's Guess the Game.
This is Stan White, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone and the Auburn Podcast that features Jared Albrick and two other guys.
All right.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game number 39. Before I get into that, I want to give a shout-out to Johnny Dent for covering me over the Christmas holidays with his very, very amusing, let's say, stripped-down version of Guess the Game.
It
was very funny, and it was very well done. And the only reason I haven't commented on until now is that something went wrong with my podcast player, and it marked that episode as already played when I hadn't actually listened to it. So I kept hearing all this talk about Johnny Dent and Guess the Game, and I'm like, what are they talking about? And it just turns out my podcast player essentially skipped that episode. So I went back and listened, and it was awesome and hilarious. So it's nice to know I have Johnny there for when I need to take vacations. But anyway, let's get back to Guess the Game 39, which is brought to you by me. I'm actually out of Guess the Game suggestions from the audience. So if you guys want to get in on that and send some more Guess the Games my way, you can send them to me on social media at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's all at Yard Sale Artist. Or you can email them to me at Jared, that's J-A-R-R-O-D, at theyardsaleartist.com. Okay, let's get into Guess the Game number 39.
They're going to run the Wildcat here with... He takes the snap. He's going to throw. He's the intended receiver in the end zone. Did he catch it? Yes! Touchdown, Auburn, in the corner of the end zone.
All right, there you have it. I don't think I've used this one before, but, you know, if I have, you know, I've done 39 of these. Don't judge me. I'll see you guys in the hint file.
Oh, that's a good one. It's a good play. It's a good game. And it's a good week to be talking about that opponent.
Is it the early score from the Auburn at Ole Miss game where we threw it to Cam?
Yes. That is 100% okay. What it is.
And the person who came under center and threw the pass was?
Cody Burns.
Cody Burns. Okay. Cody Burns threw the pass. Cam lined up wide.
Mm-hmm.
And went in the corner of the end zone and Burns threw it to him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I tell you what. I would have a harder time figuring that out, except that I've played that highlight video with the Black Eyed Peas music from that season a million times, and they play that play on it with that exact audio clip. So I've watched it happen on video as I've heard that exact Rod Bramblett call a million times. So I know that's what it is. It's good. It's a really good one. And if not for that, I'd have been like, oh man, this is hard, you know. But no, I know it's that. So.
All right, we'll go to the hint file.
Let's go to the hint file just for fun.
Here we are in the hint file. Let's get rid of those bleeps and make this exceptionally obvious to you both.
Here's Cody Burns. They're going to run the Wildcat here with Cody. He takes the snap. He's going to throw. Cameron Newton is the intended receiver in the end zone. Did he catch it? Yes! Touchdown, Auburn, in the corner of the end zone.
Yep. I know that you know. I will see you in the answer file.
I think it's funny that that's one of Cody Burns' probably three most famous and important touchdowns, and it was probably the most accurate pass he ever threw as an Auburn player, and it came when he was not playing quarterback and when his receiver was Cam Newton. That's so crazy. The other two being the touchdown he ran in to win the game against Clemson in the Peach Bowl, right in front of me, and the catch that he made in the national championship game. Can you imagine Cody Burns after the career he had? He didn't score that many touchdowns as a receiver. He was a really good blocking receiver, but he didn't catch a lot of touchdowns. Can you imagine, though, he scored a touchdown in the national championship game that was arguably the deciding points, you know?
It's huge.
That's unbelievable. It really is amazing. All right, let's get...
Let's get the answer file, and then I want to encourage listeners to submit more guesses to Jared, more games.
Give him more fuel because he does get stuff.
All right, Jonathan, Van Sneaker Company. If you guessed that this was Auburn playing Ole Miss in our magical 2010 season, well, then of course you guessed right, and I suspect that you did. So once again, if you guys out there in listener land would like to send in some play suggestions for me, you can hit me up at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And you can email me Jared, that's J-A-R-R-O-D, at theyardsaleartist.com. And until next time, Van, John, I'm pretty happy to be part of the Twitter meme mob for Auburn basketball. This is a magical time. Anyway,
I got to note what Jared does is he's always said that when he watches, the team loses. So he has his ritual. When Auburn plays basketball, he watches Airwolf.
And listen, he knows he's a jinx, and so he keeps himself away, and I appreciate his support for the team in that way.
He's going to be able to do like a book on Airwolf when Auburn basketball is done because he'll be such an expert on it. But he did post his meme in the meme storm I saw after Ole Miss, and he said he had like a 1960s meme generator. So it was like a black and white picture of a guy with a basketball, and it just said, "I heart AU," scribbled like a crayon. I thought that was really good. So good for him. All right, let me see. Do we have any of this?
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
And I say you.
All right, we got a few. First one is from Anthony on Twitter, who says, "War Eagle, I love the show. Is it me, or does Flanagan seem like he's lost his confidence, his mojo, and is struggling to get it back?"
A little bit, but not as much as I don't think he had a right to.
Yeah, again, it's very early. I mean, what has he played? Four games? Five games? Like, again, I expect us to... Again, Flanagan, at the peak of his powers, was an all-SEC basketball player. And I don't expect to see that guy until, like, the end of February. Mm-hmm. So I think he's going to slow build until then. And you can see the value of him, like we talked about earlier, with kind of the veteran presence thing. He doesn't have to – he's one of those things that can allow this team to have a whole other gear. You know what I'm saying? A whole other level if he can become the guy that he was. So
And let's remember also that last year before he was hurt, it was his team and the other players had come up to him. Now, this is not his, hasn't been his team, and he's having to fit in with a whole lot better caliber of players across the board than he had last, previously.
Yes. But there's a lot less pressure on him to do things he's not comfortable doing. Last year, he had to bring the ball up some, and he had to, kind of run the whole offense. And this year, he could just kind of do his thing. He doesn't have to carry the team in the way he did.
Yeah.
All right. Our next question is from Theodore Roosevelt, who says, "Do you think that the fans' motivation behind the tweet storms is the same one that caused a certain unnamed former quarterback to leave? It seems to me you can't have one without the other. Has that always been this way, or is it a product of social media? What are your thoughts?" I think fan is short for fanatic. I think it's part of it.
I think the quarterback left because he didn't think he was going to have as much opportunity to compete in his last season. And I understood that to he wants to make as big of a splash as he can against, get the best record and have the most. I mean, I totally got it. I didn't have a problem with it at all. Disappointing, but I got it. So I don't know how much. I think maybe sometimes the fan stuff is more than it should be, and I think sometimes it's blown out of proportion, and it just depends. And a little bit of both.
That's fair. All right. Our next question is from Papa Todd, who says, he says, our family would be considered new Auburn fans. Our fandom started when my daughter began her freshman year in 2013.
Oh,
needless to say, after the 2013 football season, we were hooked. What a way to be introduced to Auburn football. I truly enjoyed listening to the analysis and discussion from you all that have been on the roller coaster much longer than us. That being said, leading up to the 2013 season, what was the hype around Nick Marshall? Was the success a surprise? He says there seems to, and then he says, next question is, there seems to be a good bit of concern about Auburn's quarterback situation. I personally think we have a better shot of success of letting the QBs on the roster develop and battle it out rather than pursuing a golden child and having to deal with the dynamics that come along with it. Exceeding expectations is much more fun. Enjoying the show, Papa Todd.
Oh, thank you, Papa Todd. All right, I got, let me throw this out to you and then you see what you want to say. I have the three phases of Nick Marshall as far as fans go. The first phase was, man, we've got to get a quarterback in here. 2012 was not good, and, you know, Wallace, bless his heart, you know, he was never intended to be an SEC West starting quarterback. He was a good backup. He's a great guy. He's a good coach. We love him. We love his father-in-law, his wife, his little boy. God bless Jonathan Wallace. He was not the answer at quarterback. We had to get somebody in that could play SEC quarterback. And the first phase was, man, I hope this Marshall guy can just compete, can be competitive, can do something, right? That was phase one. Phase two was, okay, all right, he kind of looks like he knows what he's doing. They're trying to make a passer out of him. You know, remember the Mississippi State game? We won on a pass. Yes. They're trying to get his passing numbers up. They're trying to make a pass. It's what Gus always would do, what Rhett Lashley would always do. They're trying to make a passer out of him. I don't know if Marshall is ever going to be a good Auburn quarterback, though, because he's not a 70% passer. That was phase two, John. Phase three was, holy cow, look at him run the option. Look at him run with the ball. Look at him do the take
zone, you know, read.
The zone read on the inside out, on the outside in rather than the inside out. He ran Cam's plays in reverse, right? He had the guy he would fake to up the middle, and then he would run outside, whereas Cam would fake outside and then run up the middle. And when they figured that out, phase three was, this is one of, maybe not one of the greatest Auburn quarterbacks of all time, maybe in some ways, but one of the most significant and important and really underrated until they figured out what to do with him. All right, how do you react to that?
I think you're right that we were desperate for quarterback play after 2011, 2012. And Marshall was coming in with Gus, you know, with the change of coaches. And I think the feeling was, you know, a guy like him, an athletic guy who was a quarterback in high school in Georgia and, you know, I think at the time had the Georgia high school record for touchdowns and stuff, could be successful and productive in Gus's offense. But you know, early on in that season, like you're saying, they didn't know how to use him. You know, they had him throw too much. And then they kind of weren't figured out the best things for him and for the offense as a whole. So, but I would say the other part of this question is in 2014, that was the best offense in the country. And he was a huge part of it. I mean, he really, I think in both of those seasons, you know, it probably should have been, you know, I know Trey Mason went to New York, but I think Nick Marshall easily could have been a Heisman candidate in both those years.
For sure.
And so, but no, the expectations were not high. I think there was some hope, but we just didn't know.
Exactly.
I think it was, he played defensive back at Georgia.
Right.
Nobody had seen him play offense in an SEC at all. So that was.
And then they had to figure out how to use him. So.
Yes, but we had a lot of faith in Gus at that point. Again, this is a long time ago. You can go back and listen to the podcast at the time. We had a lot of faith in Gus as an offensive guru to use the pieces he had effectively and make stuff happen.
And he pretty much did. It just would always take him about three games to figure that out. But yeah,
you did. Absolutely. And again, in terms of the quarterback situation, I agree with it. I understand that not wanting to go after somebody big. If we could get, you know, Caleb Williams, that's different, I think. But some of these other guys, I get it. Again, what you want is a battle's fine and development's fine. I think we have a couple of young quarterbacks that could develop and maybe be good players in the SEC in a year or two, but we got to win. We got to win next year. And so the question is, do you have guys that can do that? Supposedly they're still talking to this Robbie Ashford guy who's a backup at Oregon about him, maybe him coming in, and it would be maybe him competing with Calzada. So
we got half of Oregon down here by now.
So I think it's a good question though about the kind of the philosophy and the, you know, going after guys in the portal and stuff. All right. Our next question is from friend of the podcast, Auburn Elvis. Who says, for this is in relation to the Georgia basketball game on Wednesday, says, what are the odds that Georgia fails to show up on Wednesday for the game, citing some excuse like COVID, winter storm, incontinence, or all of the above?
Well, if it was Alabama bringing the Iron Bowl trophy to Auburn, it would be 100% because they never come anymore when it's their turn. Man, a bunch of losers. But, yeah, no, I think Georgia needs to find an excuse to get out of town. Certainly their fans seem to have.
They will. And I think it's not going to be pretty. Our next question is from Josh Corbett, who says, was Auburn ranked number two because the media and the NCAA not liking Bruce Pearl? Auburn received more first place votes, but was not ranked number one.
Yeah, I think it's like a handful of people that not like Bruce Pearl was the thing, because we got more first place votes than Gonzaga. Yeah. That showed you that there are plenty who don't mind, you know, that are happy about it.
I mean, the guy who voted us ninth, it was one of the advanced stat things that has us ninth, one of the Ken Palm rankings. And I think he literally is just copying and pasting that into his voting ballot. So that's it for listener questions.
All right. Our last stop. We're going to hop in the car, take a trip.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
Oh, what's ahead? What's that ahead? It's a... Oh, dodge the portal, John. Steer right, steer left. Ah! All right, whew, that was close. We almost went through the transfer portal. We could have ended up on Locked On Auburn or the Ever to Conquer podcast instead of this one if we're not careful. Not that that would be bad necessarily.
No.
Or we could end up on the AuburnSports.com one, and then we'd have to sit around eating wings all day and like, you know, talking about message boards, and that would, I don't know, so. I think it worked out that we are where we are.
We're in the right place.
We are.
But there are, again, transfers. It's not just an Auburn thing. They're going fast and furious everywhere. Georgia and Alabama are losing players. Now the title game is over. Players are transferring into other schools. So it's not just an us thing. And like, people want to focus on just Auburn and how it's impacting us. But it is a – there's a LSU and Arkansas have basically traded secondaries in the last 2 weeks. I'm not joking.
That's
like
amazing.
Three guys in each team's secondaries have switched to the other school.
Incredible. And Alabama's lost way more than people realize, I think.
Yeah, they've lost some depth. But again, they brought it. They got Eli Ricks from LSU. They're a good cornerback. And they got the best running back from Georgia Tech. They're probably their best player. So, it, you know, they're going to do okay.
Yeah,
I know. Georgia's had a bunch of guys going pro, and they're going to lose some depth pieces too. So, and Florida's getting some guys transfer in, but they lost a bunch of guys heading out when the new coach came too. So
everybody just don't panic. Sit back. Let it all sort out and sift out. It's a new world. We're not used to this kind of free agency, so it's just going to take a while to figure it
out. We're not. And we're going to talk. I want to talk in a later show about kind of the name, image, and likeness and its impact on – what's happening with transfer portal and
we're having a lot of things all change at once. There's that. There's the COVID business. There's the basically free agency transfer. It's just a different sport than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, and you know, and still having conversations about changing the playoff and stuff. So it's
a
lot.
That's right. It is a lot. It's for a sport as conservative and traditional historically as college football has been. This is a crazy time for it. I think they're going to look back at this and say, just look at all that they're going to talk about these few years for 30 years or more. They're going to point back to these years and say, oh, those were those years where everything got all upside down and crazy. I guarantee you.
And the sport changed.
Yes, it changed and maybe not done. I mean, it may keep, you know. So, all right. Anything else that we've missed?
I'm going to say this about the transfer portal and the football stuff. If that stuff bothers you, if you don't, you know, if you want to just focus on other things, I would say let it go and just focus on the happy place. Don't worry about the football thing. It's months away, and enjoy the basketball. Have fun with it and be proud. Like, don't just be like, oh, I think we got a shot this year. No, we have the best team in the country. Van, I want you to say it. Auburn, we have the best team in the country.
Auburn.
And March Madness, let's shock the world.
And it won't be a shock because
that's what
we
I'm talking about.
Are the best.
That's what I'm talking about.
There we go. That's the theme of tonight. I've even got the name of the show now. It's always happy for me when I get the name of the show before we sign off. So I'd have to sit here at 12:30 a.m. going, what are we going to call this one? Dang it. What am I going to call this one? Yeah, I got it. All right, John, our time is up. We thank you for your work, John.
Bring it, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.